Good morning. When you walk into each one of our campuses, whether it's Vermilion or Avon Lake, whether it's in the RNC or here in the auditorium, you're going to encounter a word sooner or later that some people would say is a bad word. It's not like it's a swear word, but it's a negative word. It's a word that's not positive. And you'll see this word plastered on a wall, perhaps, in one of our campuses. You'll see it on the bulletin. You'll see it in literature. And you might say to yourself, well, why are they promoting this word? This is not a good word. You're thinking to yourself, well, what is that word? It's the word surrender. We talk today, in our church about loving God, loving people, living surrendered. And most people are like, yeah, loving God, that's a good thing. Loving people, that's good. But what's up with the surrender? I mean, doesn't surrender mean I lose? I'm defeated? I lost? It's bad? You know, that's a bad thing. So why would we promote surrender? And we do. You see it all over the place. I talk about it. We preach about it. We sing about it. Surrender, even though it's used a lot of times as a bad or a negative way, sometimes surrender is a good thing. Sometimes surrender is the best thing. Today is April 10th. A year ago yesterday, so that would be April 9th, 2015, right? A year ago yesterday was the 150th anniversary. Anybody know of what? One of the most important historic meetings that's ever been held on American soil. Yes, it happened in a small village in Virginia. Two great men met in a living room in Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia, General Ulysses S. Grant and General Robert E. Lee, and they hammered out the terms of the surrender that would effectually, not officially, but effectually end the Civil War. And I know this illustration works a lot better in northern Ohio than it does in South Carolina. But most people in the South would say surrender was a bad thing. It was not good. We lost. In fact, the president of the Confederate States, Jefferson Davis, wrote Robert E. Lee, the commanding officer, or commanding general, and said that was a bad decision. You did not have the authority to do that. It was unreasonable. It was a bad decision. And, of course, it eventually ended the war. Just a month later, the war was over. And so people in the South are like, why did that happen? But if you read the correspondence, the letters between General Grant and General Lee in the days, even the hours, because they weren't that far away from each other, and there was horseback going back and forth, even the hours before that the historic meeting, if you read those letters, you see very clearly in both men's writing the primary motivation for the surrender. It was, in General Robert E. Lee's words, to end the effusion of bloodshed. A fancy way of saying to stop the bloodshed. I'm sure most of you know this, that the Civil War was the most horrific, the most bloody war America's ever fought. Far and away, more Americans died in the Civil War than any other war. It's not even close. Well over 500,000 soldiers and civilians died in the Civil War. It was horrific bloodshed. And these two generals realized, we've got to put an end to the bloodshed. And that is the primary motivation for the surrender. Surrender was a good thing for both sides. Surrender was actually the very best thing that they could have done. Now, sometimes we use a word that it has almost an opposite meaning based upon how it gets used. For instance, think of the word retreat, another battle term, retreat. When it comes to a military, retreat's a bad thing. We're losing, we're running away, we're retreating. But when you think about a prayer retreat or a youth retreat, a ladies' retreat, a men's retreat, now it's a good word. We're going to hang out with the guys. We're going to get away to pray. Suddenly that word flips in its meaning. I think about the word lower. Lower is typically seen as inferior to higher. It's bad. It's not a good thing. Higher is better. Lower is not so good. No one wants a lower grade. They want a higher grade. Nobody wants lower pay. They want higher pay. But think about the Masters tournament this weekend. Nobody wants the higher score. Now suddenly, lower is better. Or if you've got high blood pressure, lower blood pressure is better. You know, depending upon how the word is used, lower can be better. And this is the same way it is with the word surrender. While most of us think of the word surrender as I'm losing, I've been defeated, this is a bad thing, when it comes to surrendering to God, surrender is the very best thing you could do. Surrender is the best thing you could do in your relationship with God. It's the best way to live your life in relationship with God. Surrender is not a bad thing, it's a good thing. And as I try to explain that to people and they try to get their hands around what is typically a negative word, but now all of a sudden we're saying it's a positive word, sometimes the best way to explain that is to show you a picture, to help you see surrender. So if you'll turn with me to Matthew chapter 6, or actually Matthew chapter 16, verses 21 to 24, I want to show you a picture of surrender. It's in the words of Jesus himself, Matthew chapter 16. And let's stand and read this. I hope you've got your Bibles with you. I'll be reading out of the New International Version, Matthew chapter 16, starting at verse 21. We'll just read a couple verses. Matthew 16, 21. From that time on, remember that phrase, from that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples, he's actually casting some vision here, explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, that he must be killed, and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human or your own concerns. Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. You may be seated. So there in verse 24, you see it? There in verse 24 is the picture of surrender. It's one of the most famous phrases, verses that Jesus said. It is a beautiful picture, even though it's a painful picture. It's a beautiful picture of surrender. However, it's a picture and it's a verse that has been grossly misinterpreted over the years. I've heard preachers, I've heard students, I've heard professors take this verse and twist all kinds of meanings out of it that I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. That's not what Jesus was saying. Look closely. That's not what he meant. The reason this verse gets misinterpreted so much is because people ignore the very first word of the verse. I thought you would look down. Good, good. What's the first verse? What's the first word of that verse? Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up the cross, and follow me. The then is a very significant word. It's a connecting word. It means that what I'm about to say is a response to what's just happened. The then connects what's just happened with what Jesus is about to say and puts them together and helps us understand what he's about to say. And if we don't understand what's happened before, we're going to misinterpret what he's about to say, and that's what happens again and again. So what's just happened in verses 21, 22, and 23? What's the then? Well, what's just happened is Jesus has cast vision. Jesus has kind of taken his disciples aside and maybe took his arms like this, his hands like this, and said, guys, we're going to Jerusalem. I want to paint a picture. I want to cast some vision for you about what's coming. I want you to know real clearly what's happening. We're going to Jerusalem. Look at verse 21. And I want to explain to you that I must go. That what's going to happen there is not an accident. You know, I must go to Jerusalem. I must suffer many things. I'm still in verse 21. I at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and that I must. This is so clearly what Jesus is doing here. I must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. What Jesus is doing is saying, guys, we're going to take a journey to Jerusalem. And once we get to Jerusalem and I journey into the gates there, it's going to start a holy week. It's going to start a very significant week in my life. Don't miss this. I'm casting vision ahead of time because I want you to see the journey that I'm about to take, because this journey that I'm about to take is not only to pay for the sins of the world when I die on the cross, but it's a journey that you're going to take again and again and again. And so I want you to know what's happening here. In fact, last couple of weeks, we've talked about seeing this journey. And we've seen how Jesus will cast a vision for us. He'll give us a dream of, this is what I want you to do. This is what I'm calling you to. This is something that I have for you. And that vision then needs to be met with prayer as we understand what God's doing. And as we pray and as God calls us to prayer, it builds our faith, because the vision that he's calling to us that ends with celebration involves surrender and sacrifice, two things that people just typically don't want to do. So God casts a vision. Jesus to his disciples, cast a vision. And then we see the prayer that happens later on in this passage as in the Garden of Gethsemane, as Jesus, you know, expresses his heart to God. And we see the faith of Jesus even in this passage. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to die. And I'm not going to have the power to bring myself back. But I believe, I have the faith to believe that God will raise me from the dead. I will be raised. This is what he's saying in verse 21. And that surrender, that ultimate sacrifice where I end the whole process by saying it is finished, and into your hands, like, commit my spirit, then doesn't end with the cross. It goes to the resurrection, the celebration of the resurrection, the ascension. And this journey that I've been talking about that you see in the Holy Week is also the picture of the journey that Jesus took, you know, in the big picture. He left heaven and took a journey to earth. We call that Christmas. Was born, lived a life, took this journey on earth, and then had, you know, that traumatic experience of his last week with the cross, resurrection, ascension, up into heaven, and we've completed the journey. So the big picture of Jesus leaving heaven, coming to earth, going to the cross, resurrection, ascension, back to heaven, is then repeated in that last week. And this is significant because God will call us on a journey over and over and over again. We're in the midst of one right now in the 2020 vision. We're in the midst of a journey that's based upon the same journey that Jesus took. And we're going to be invited into this journey again and again. That's why I keep helping you see these stages, so that when you are in the journey and the moment of surrender comes, and when God's challenging your faith, you're not like, what's happening to me? Why is this going on? Why is God picking on me? Why is this happening? You understand the picture. You understand the journey. And if you've been with me the last couple of weeks, hopefully you're getting this. This is going to be a journey he will take you on again and again and again. And it's the one we're in right now. And it's going to end in celebration if we don't stay back here but continue to move through. If we'll take that journey, it's going to be a beautiful, powerful celebration for each one of us individually who take the journey, as well as for us as a church. So that's why I keep putting this up in front of you. Today, we want to focus on surrender. Last week was faith. Week before that was prayer. So here we are talking about surrender. This word that at first we think is a negative thing, this word that at first we're like, I'm losing, I'm defeated, but now we're realizing that sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's the best thing. And so Jesus casts this vision in verse 21. Look at how Peter responds. This is classic, right? Peter, very next verse, verse 22. Peter took him aside and began to, can you believe what you're reading? Jesus is being rebuked by one of his disciples. It's mind-boggling. But not just the words he began to rebuke him, it's the words that he actually says. Never, no, this will never happen. And then the next word, you see it? Lord. Does that strike anybody else as odd that Peter would say, you're my Lord, but my response to you is no? Never. This is not going to happen. And you can tell clearly, I'm not going to let this happen. Peter is amping up. He's saying, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes. This is not going to happen to you. I'm going to take control of the situation. Jesus, you know, just like I did with the boat, I put you in the back of the boat in the storm, you know, took care of you. I'm going to take care of you now. This is not going to happen. No, Lord. Dangerous words. Actually, it's an oxymoron. If Jesus is the Lord of your life, you can't and shouldn't say no. And if you find yourself saying no when God calls you to surrender, you need to ask yourself, is he really Lord of my life? Do I understand what it means for Jesus to be Lord? Because every time I say no, Lord, it declares that I don't understand. I love Peter's response because it's so like us. You know, we're not proud of Peter's response. We're like, I can't believe you said this, but we say these things all the time. Maybe not loudly. No, Lord. Ours is more like, no. No, I'll take a pass on that. Let somebody else do that. No, this can't happen. And Jesus does not take this lightly. Very next verse, verse 23. Jesus turned and said to Peter, strong words, get behind me. Not get behind me, Peter. Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. I've come to finish the work that God's given me. I've come to complete the vision that he's given me. You are a stumbling block to me. Why? Because you don't have in mind the concerns of God, but merely your own concerns. This is why we say, no, Lord. Now, it's clear that Peter is a disciple of Jesus. We're in the chapter 16 of Matthew. Peter's been following Jesus for years now, maybe two and a half, two and three quarters years. And he has seen a lot from Jesus. But he's at a point of surrender that's terrifying him. He's at a point of surrender. He's at a crossroads of surrender. And he can't bear it. And so the words come tumbling out of his mouth. And then, now we're ready to do verse 24. After what Peter says, after what Jesus says, you don't have God's idea in mind, you don't have God's plan in mind, you're just thinking from your own concerns. Then, verse 24, then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple. Now, Peter, I know you want to be my disciple. And Peter, I know you've got good intentions, but right now, all you're thinking about is yourself. And so Peter and the rest of you guys, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up the cross, and follow me. Follow me, Jesus says. The real strong implication is instead of following yourselves, instead of following your own desires, I'm telling you, you need to deny those desires. That drive that's inside of you. And furthermore, you need to learn that this is going to happen again and again. Of course, you know the word disciples means learner, right? Disciple means a student, a learner. So a disciple follows Jesus to learn from Jesus to become more like Jesus. And Jesus says to Peter right here, Peter, I've got plans for you, but you need to learn surrender, because learning surrender is an absolutely essential part of what it means to be a disciple. I put the word learning there because this is what's happening. This is a teaching moment. For Jesus, every moment's a teaching moment. And again, a disciple is a learner. So they're learning surrender here. And Jesus casts a vision. He paints a picture of what surrender looks like in the context of Peter saying, no, I'm in control. I'm in charge here. I'm not going to let this happen. Write these words down. Surrender is giving up control to another. This is what Jesus is teaching Peter. Peter, I know that you've got a vision. I know that you're a strong leader. I know you've got your plans in mind. We all do. We've all got our plans. But I need you to learn surrender, Peter. Following me means I'm the leader, not you. I love the Message translation of this verse. Jesus says, anyone who wants to follow me, anybody who wants to come with me where I'm going, has to, let's all say these words out loud together, real loudly. Let me lead. Who's speaking here? Jesus. I think this place is full of people who are the anyones. We're here because we want to be a follower of Jesus, because we are followers of Jesus. We want to be with him. We want to follow him. We want to learn from him. We want to become more like him. But we need to let him lead. I can't believe I'm about to do this. I'm about to quote a country song because I don't like country music. But it's, Jesus, take the wheel. You're not in the driver's seat, Jesus says. I am. And he's going to have to teach this to Peter again and again. And he's teaching it to you and I again and again, because we are learning surrender. Surrender is so hard to learn. It's not something that you just hear a sermon and now you got it. It's not just something you see stamped on a wall and now you got it. It's not just something you sing and now you got it. It's going to be a lifelong process. It certainly has been for me. And that's why we call it living surrendered. It's not a one-time surrender or 2, 3, 10, 20, you know, once a week. It's living a lifestyle of surrender. And we need to learn what? Here's the picture. To deny ourselves, take up our cross. What is it that we're denying? Well, we're denying that desire to seize control. This is what the self does. The self that each one of us have inside of us tries to figure out, what's the best situation for me? How am I going to get the most blessing out of this? How am I going to get the most benefit out of this? How can I make the most money? How can I get things to work out for me? We're always thinking about, how can things work out best for me? And what do I need to do to control the situation so that things turn out for me? We do this naturally. It's actually a part of our sin nature. We're so focused on ourselves and our self-orientation that we see everything based upon, how is it going to help me? And how might this hurt me? And how it might help me and how it might hurt me become the defining boundaries for how we make decisions about how we spend our time, how we spend our money, who we spend our time with, what job we take, what we do in our life. It's all based upon, is this going to help me? Is this going to hurt me? I'm going to figure out what to do based upon those two things. I want to be helped. I don't want to be hurt. And so then we see from our perspective and make decisions based upon our perspective, and we end up seizing control. Instead of Jesus leading, we start to say, let me lead. We just flip it. No, Lord. I know you're calling me to do this, but no, Lord, because I don't think I'm going to get helped here. I think I might get hurt here. I don't like the way this is looking. I don't like the way this is playing out. But listen to God. God says, I have so much blessing waiting for you. This is what Jesus is thinking with Peter. Peter, I have so much for you. I'm going to use you in amazing ways. You're going to be one of the greatest leaders in the early church. People are going to get healed from your words. The one place the Bible says that Peter walked through the streets of Jerusalem and his shadow fell on people and they got healed. I mean, the kind of things that God did through Peter are astonishing. Jesus knows all that. He's not going to be surprised. He says, there's great blessings for you, Peter. In fact, this is true for us. The greatest blessings that God has for us are waiting on us to learn surrender. Write that down and then listen to this. Jesus says to Peter in so many words, I'm turning over the keys of the kingdom in a little bit. You're going to be the first leader of the band of the disciples after I leave. I'm going to use you to courageously lead the church. Peter, I've got so many great plans for you, but hear this. I am not about to let you lead until you learn surrender. If you like to take notes, you might want to write that down. I am not, this is what God says to each one of us. I am not about to let you lead into a pathway of blessing until you learn surrender. This is a crucible moment for Peter. This is a defining moment for Peter. Peter and the rest of you disciples, you've got to deny that deep urge, that deep determination to run your own life. In fact, you could write down this phrase. Surrender is taking up your cross, dying to this deep determination that I will run my life. After all, it's my life, we reason. It's my life. I should get the right to choose who will run my life. And you're right to a point. What you don't realize is that your life, your will, you, all that you are, belongs to another. Belongs to the King of the universe for two big reasons. One, because he made you. You are made in the image of God. He formed you. He shaped you. He breathes his life into you. You don't belong to yourself. Number one, you belong to God because he made you. Number two, you belong to Jesus Christ. You belong to God because he bought you with his own blood. So if you're a Christian today, there's two really big reasons why you should never say, no, Lord. There's two really big reasons why you should never say, no, Lord, let me lead. There's two really big reasons why you should give up control and take up your cross. Today, we think of the cross as a piece of jewelry, maybe something you see in the church. But for those people, there was no crosses on buildings. Nobody hung a cross around their neck. The cross was instantly recognized as an instrument of death. Instantly. So when Jesus says, deny yourself, deny that deep urge to run your life, to be in control, and take up your cross, there was no mistaking what he was saying. You need to put to death that deep primal urge to run your own life. This is the challenge all of us face. Right now, it's a challenge that Peter is facing. And Jesus wastes no words in communicating to his future leader of the disciples how important this moment is. I mean, the strong language that he uses. So you see it now? Now you understand what this verse means? It's not to say, to deny yourself, to say, I'm not important. It's not to, you know, abuse yourself because you're not important. Absolutely not. That's not what deny yourself means. It means to deny yourself's desire to rule. It means to deny yourself's driving ambition and determination to run your own life. That's what deny yourself means. And if it wasn't clear, then the next phrase, take up your cross, die to that determination, is crystal clear. Have you come to the point where you've given up control to Jesus Christ? The truth of the matter is many of you have. Probably not all of you, but many of you have. You gave up control, but then you took the wheel back. This is what we do. In a moment, in a sermon, you know, in a moment in prayer, we realize I need to give up control. I need to surrender, and we do, and it's awesome. But then somehow we get to thinking maybe I am better to run my life than God is, and I'm not really happy how things are turning out right now. So we seize control back. So that's why it's called living surrender. I'm giving up control. Now how do you do this? This is a question I get answered again and again when I talk about surrender. People will say to me, you know, I get the loving God, loving people, but the living surrender thing, now how do I do that? It's a perpetual talking to God, surrendering to God. That's why we call it breathing. That's why we call it this rhythm, this living surrendered, where I am basically praying, Lord, I give you, because I'm giving up control, I give you control of this situation. I give you control of this hurt in my life. I give you control. I give you my pain. I give you my hurt. I give you my anger. I give you my fears. I give you my anxiety. Whatever it is I'm doing right now, I give that to you, Lord. It's this, you know, I kind of coined this phrase. Living surrender is living a, Lord, I give you my whatever it is, my fears, my anger, my concerns, my anxieties, my, you know, the situation. It's living this, Lord, I give you my blank kind of life. That's what living surrendered looks like. And I want to quickly move through four areas that are essential for you to give to the Lord. Because remember, surrender is giving up control. The first and foremost If I'm going to deny myself, take up my cross, if I'm going to deny myself's ambition to seize control, I've got to go to the control center of my life. Where's that? Bible says that's your heart. The heart is the control, in the Bible's words, the heart is the control center of your life. Sometimes it's described as the mind or the will or the soul, but it's clear that this is the heart, this is the deepest, the best meaning of the word heart in the Bible. It's not an organ that beats in your chest. It's the control center. So that's where you start. Lord, I give you my heart. You sing this. You say this. You pray this. Lord, I give you my heart. In fact, that's how you become a Christian, right? Lord, I give up control. I give you my life. I give you my heart. Here I am. I give myself to you. I surrender to you. Now, that's just the beginning. From there, the Bible then begins to talk about how we need to give up our body to God. Because if he is Lord, then he is Lord of all. Turn to Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6, amazing, amazing chapter. This whole idea of giving up my body includes my mouth, it includes my mind, it includes the members of my body, what Paul talks about in Romans 6 as you know, the members of our body, instruments of our body. Don't give them over, verse 13, as instruments of unrighteousness, but as instruments of righteousness. So it's what I say, it's my mouth. It's what I think, it's my mind. It's what I do with my hands and my feet and every member of my body. So this is the physical part of me. And I want you to look at your translation of Romans chapter 6, verse 13. While I put up on the screen, compare them, the Good News translation. I love this translation of this verse. So if you've got the ESV or the NIV, you could, you know, look at yours, compare it to this translation here. Paul says, nor must you surrender. Well, great word. You know, the word there is to offer, to give to God, to you know, sell out to him, to surrender to him. Nor must you surrender any part of yourselves. That's your body. It's your mind. Pay attention. Don't surrender any part of yourselves to sin, to be used for wicked purposes. Instead, give yourselves to God. Give yourselves to God. This is the surrender. This is Cree phrase. As those who have been brought back from death to life. Here we go again. And surrender your whole being to God to be used for righteous purposes. As instruments of righteousness. And so, notice this phrase here, give yourselves to God. This is this perpetual surrender. This, Lord, I give you my eyes, I give you my mouth, I give you my mind, my will, my hands, every part of me. And Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians when he talks about premarital sex and he talks about fornication and adultery. He says, whoa, 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 your body belongs to God. What are you doing giving it to a whore? What are you doing giving it to a prostitute? What are you doing and giving it to a person out of marriage covenant? All these ideas are all bad because you're taking the part of your body that's supposed to be an instrument of righteousness and you're using it for sinful, wrong, God not glorifying purposes. So it's whatever part of your body that you have, you have to use it for the glory of God. Whether you eat, whether you drink, whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. This is Paul's secret of how we live. Offer your bodies, he says in Romans 12. Offer your bodies as living sacrifices to God. This offering is this surrender. And it's an ongoing process of us surrendering our heart, then our body. And then the most difficult for all of us, Lord, I give you my resources. What are we talking about? We're talking about your money. We're talking about your possessions, your assets, all these resources that you have, the money that you have, the money that you're making, the money that you will make, the things that you own, that they're possessions in your house or possessions in a bank somewhere, the assets you have. You add all that up, and that all belongs to God. Everybody look up here, notice, or even look at your outline. Either way, notice the first words of each one of these prayers. Notice it. What is it? See, the issue here, the struggle point here, is back to the lordship of Jesus Christ. If he's the Lord, then he's the owner. He's the master. He's God. If he's the Lord, then you're not. Well, then who are you? Well, in relationship to God, if he's the Lord, then you're the servant. If he's the owner, then you're the steward. You discover your identity in relationship to who God is. This is where we struggle. And some of us will say, Lord, I'll give you my heart, and I might even give you my body, but here's where we stop. My resources, my resources are mine. I don't think God went to work and punched the clock. I don't think God stayed up late on that project. I think I did that. They're my wages. I earned them. And so we think that it belongs to us. But we don't recognize, if we're Christians, all that we are belongs to God. The intelligence that we have, the breath that we have, the ability to think, to work in that project, everything we have has been given to us by God. Are we living for ourselves? Or are we living for God? This is the crisis moment when it comes to our resources. This is why the 2020 vision is such a perfect opportunity for each one of us to grow. It brings us to the crossroads of surrender like nothing else. We've had this vision God's given us, the 2020 vision. It's been cast, and the journey has begun. And so the vision has been cast. Now we're praying about it, and we're asking God to build our faith so that when we get to the moment of surrender, the crossroads of surrender, we don't shrink back and say those terrible words, no, Lord. But instead, we live consistent with who we are, and we say, yes, Lord, all I have belongs to you. My heart, my soul, my body, my resources, my money, everything I have belongs to you. And see, what some of us want to do with the 2020 vision is we say, Pastor Jim, I agree with the vision. Reaching people is awesome. Reaching people for Christ, I can't think of a better thing to give to. And I want to give, Pastor Jim. I want to be generous. Awesome. And so I'm going to give more than I've ever given before. Great. But is that what God's calling you to do? Recognize what the moment is here. It's not you decide how generous you're going to be this time. I mean, that's wonderful, but that's not what the moment that we're at. That's not the crossroads we're at. This is a lordship crossroads. This is a surrender crossroads where God's bringing us because he wants to bring us to celebration. He wants to bring us to joy. He wants to teach us how to trust him. He's bringing us to the crossroads of surrender. And if we say, I'm going to be generous more than I've ever been before, that probably and might be a cop-out. So I don't have to say, Lord, what do you want me to give? I give you my resources because I'm afraid you might say, I want you to give $100,000. I want you to give $50,000. And we're like, I don't have that. That's not what this is about. This is about the vision that God's given us. He's going to resource it through us. It's not about what you have. It's about what God's going to throw through you. It's not about what you have. It's about what God's going to flow through you. And right now, all you see is what you have in your wallet, in your bank, and you think, this is what I can afford. In fact, I'm going to be generous and give more. But that's not what this moment is about. It's a moment of surrender. I want you to recognize the moment. I want you to recognize as a stage on the journey. And if you can hear what I'm saying, God bless you for your desire to be generous. But don't use that as a smokescreen for disobedience. Don't use that as a cop-out from you asking God, Lord, I surrender to you. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to give? Because this is what we do. That's why the last thing we surrender is ourself. Lord, I give you everything. I give you my fears. Give you the things that I love the most. give you my future. I give you my hopes. I give you my dreams. I give everything to you, Lord. Lord, I surrender what? All. See this, all this surrender here? This is fully surrendering. This represents everything that I am. Fully surrendering is surrendering every part of my life to God. And it's an act of trust. Choosing to surrender is an act of trust. Likewise, when you get to that crossroads where you choose surrender, if you choose to resist, why would you do that? Why would you resist surrendering to a God who loves you so much? Why would you resist surrendering to a God who has given you so much? Here's why. Because you are living I don't know if I can do this. I don't trust. I'm afraid. So I have to seize, here's that word again, control kind of life. It's not good grammar. It doesn't roll off the tongue well, but it's a good sentence. On paper, none of us want to resist God, but we end up resisting him because he challenges us to give that 50,000, that 100,000. For some of us, it's 1,000. Whatever it is, it challenges us. And we're like, I can't do that. Fear seizes us. It seizes us, and we end up resisting surrender. We end up turning away from God. See, this is one of the reasons I love Jesus so much, because this critical point, Jesus didn't just talk about it. He modeled it. You know where I'm going. Matthew chapter 26, the night before Jesus dies. He's facing this crossroads of surrender. He's facing this biggest act of surrender in his life. The Garden of Gethsemane. I'm in Matthew 26, 39. Going a little farther, Jesus fell down with his face to the ground. I can't remember whether it's this one or Luke, the actual Greek, is that he kept falling. He just kept falling down to the ground and prayed, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. And then here's these beautiful words, beautiful picture of surrender. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Yet not as I will, but as you will. You could write this down. Living surrendered is a living a not my will, but yours be done. I've been at this crossroads over and over and over and over and over and over again as a follower of Jesus Christ. And I tried to think of some stories that I could tell you about these moments of surrender. And guys, God has grown my faith and grown my faith, my wife and I's faith. And he has challenged us to give money away over and over and over again. Sometimes big amounts, give furniture away. I remember one time we were at church planters and we had hardly any money. We were poor. And some people from the church graciously got together and gave us a Christmas bonus. And we were blown away. And the moment we got that bonus, God spoke to both Andrew and I. He said, I want you to give that away to a lady named Janet, single mother. And we're like, we need this money. It was so clear that God said, give it to Janet. Give it to her family. And we wrestled a little bit, you know, in the moment, but it was so clear we gave it. And the joy on her face, the joy we felt when we gave it to her was better than anything we could have bought for Christmas. And, you know, this has happened to us again and again. I remember I tried to think of a big moment in my life that I wanted to share with you. And here it is. I'm kind of embarrassed to share it because it took me so long to surrender. And it seems like so long ago, but it was a really big deal then. That is that many of you know that when God called me to be a preacher, I didn't want to be a preacher. I wanted to be a basketball coach. And I dragged my feet, and God was like, no, I want you to be a preacher. So I thought I could trick God and, you know, dress up like, you know, be a Jonah, but dress up like somebody else. And so I decided to go to seminary, but not to be a preacher. I went to seminary to become a professor of New Testament. Now I'm still in the ministry, you know, and I dreamed about being a professor, and God was like, no. It took me 3 years to get this. No, you're not going to be a professor. You're going to be a preacher. I don't want to be a preacher. So another dream that I had was to be to be in a rock and roll band, okay? This is why it's embarrassing. When I lived in Boston, I was a part of this fantastic band, not because I was a great guitar player, I was a decent guitar player, but we had an amazing sax player, an amazing vocalist. We were tight as a band, and we started getting recognition. We started playing at some big acts, and things started going really well. We're playing at one of the biggest venues in Boston, and it was awesome. And then we came to graduation, and we're like, can we make a living with this? Not right now. So I went to seminary. We broke up. But I kept all my gear because I had this dream that, you know, maybe I could play in this rock and roll band and then come out and talk about Jesus during intermission and then get back to the band. And in the back of my mind, I always, you know, I'll keep my guitars, keep my amps, because you collect all this gear. I had some great stuff. But God kept saying to me, sell that stuff. And I was like, no, Lord. I probably didn't say that. I was kind of like, ugh. He kept at me. And this was a point of surrender that I just was not willing to give up. I didn't want to be a preacher. I wanted to be a rock and roll guitar player. I know it's goofy, but that's where I was, you know. And God kept saying, no, that's not the plan. That's not the vision I have for you. Yeah, what's the vision I have? No, it's not the vision I have for you. And I'm embarrassed to say how long I wrestled with this. But finally, the point I came, I said, okay, I'll put an ad in the paper. And I'm hoping, man, hope nobody wants this stuff. The day I put the ad in, I get a call. Guy's so excited. He wants everything I have. I'm like, what? And so again, I'm like, I wasn't sure whether to give him the address or not. You know, do I really want to do this? And it was a difficult moment for me because I was surrendering a dream. I know some of you laugh at that, but it was a big deal to me. I didn't want to be a preacher. Anything else, basketball coach, professor, guitar player in a band, but not a preacher. But God said, that's my plan for you. And I became so miserable, so bound up, because I wouldn't let go. I wouldn't surrender. And I remember the day, Andrew and I were talking about this yesterday, I remember the day when the guy came over, I gave him the address, he came over, gave me the money, walked out with my stuff, and all of a sudden this peace begin to flood me. He writes it down. We are never truly free until we have fully surrendered to the will of God. And I still look back on that goofy time. It wasn't goofy then. It was a big deal because this is the crossroads God's brought me again and again. And if I could surrender there, I can surrender anywhere. And guys, I want you to know this: you've got your stories, and you'll have your stories if you will surrender. Remember what we wrote down. The greatest blessings of God are waiting on you to learn surrender. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, woo! If anybody understands what I'm saying, it's a big deal. Give us the courage to surrender all to you. Give us the faith to believe that you are good. And may we sing and say, Lord, I give you my heart, as we surrender all to you. For we pray in Jesus' holy name. Amen.